Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Sister Olga of the Eucharist is an Iraqi nun whose faith took her into Iraq's hard side long before the U.S. invasion in 2003. From her work in the streets under Saddam Hussein, she knows the rough side of Baghdad, the dark halls of Abu Ghraib prison. Now she's based in the U.S. She just returned from a trip to her homeland where she witnessed the struggles of Iraqis and Americans up close. She sat with refugees in Jordan, her own family in Kirkuk, Iraqis and American soldiers in Baghdad, came close herself to the raw emotions and sudden danger of Iraq today. This hour On Point, a conversation with Iraqi nun Sister Olga Yaqob about love and war and the way forward in Iraq. Joining me now in the studio is Sister Olga Yaqob, Olga of the Eucharist. She's an Iraqi nun who came to the U.S. in 2001. Today, she ministers to students at Boston University's Catholic Center. Before coming to the States, she founded a lay ministry in Iraq called Love Your Neighbor and an order of nuns in the Assyrian Catholic Church, the first in 700 years. She's a practicing Roman Catholic. Sister Olga, thank you very much for joining us.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for having me.
And I should say, full disclosure, right up front, we've known each other for a while now. I'm even one of those, and probably many, who chipped in a little bit to get you to Iraq. Why did you go?
Because especially as we approach the fifth anniversary of this war, I felt after all those years, there have been even more misunderstanding and miscommunication, especially as an Iraqi person living in the United States and hearing how people have experienced war from inside Iraq, and also hearing how people are viewing the war from inside of United States. So I felt the need to go there and be that present to communicate with both of them and to both of them what they cannot hear from each other.
You got to Iraq, you set off in mid-December, got back just before the middle of January.
Correct.
How many years had it been since you had been in Iraq?
Was exactly after 4 years and 7 months. I visited Iraq right after the war started in March 2003, and I arrived there in May 2003, and I was there for a few months during that summer. And then since then, I wasn't able to visit, but I'm grateful to God and to my bishop here in Archdiocese of Boston, Cardinal Sean, for the permission to be able to visit after 4 years and 7 months.
We want to hear a lot of details, and we know it wasn't only in Iraq. You sat with your family, now refugees, some of them in Jordan.
Correct.
But give us your sort of big takeaway here. Do you think that Americans understand what's going on in Iraq today?
With all my respect and love to all the people that I love here in the United States, I don't think they do understand fully what has happened since 2003. I mean, even for myself living here, and despite of all the communications that I have had throughout the years with Iraqi people, with my family there, but still I was to some extent shocked of some of the things that I saw in my recent visit. I tried to prepare myself a lot, spiritually, emotionally, mentally, but no matter how much I tried, still the reality that I saw was overwhelming.
So what shocked you? I mean, you did not go in a naive way. Mm-hmm. You've been on the poor, you've seen the poor side mm-hmm. of Iraq. You were there during sanctions mm-hmm. and during war before, the Gulf War, mm-hmm. War with Iran years mm-hmm. ago. Mm-hmm. So even with all that, mm-hmm. I mean, you went into the prison at Abu Ghraib when it was still mm-hmm. under Saddam Hussein. Mm-hmm. Even with all that, you were shocked by mm-hmm. what?
I think the most difficult point for me, Tom, was because, as I said earlier, I took this trip especially during the Christmas season, the season where, as Christians, we celebrate the gift of God is peace to humanity, that he sent his son, the Prince of Peace, to this world. So I wanted to be that presence of peace to all people by visiting the Iraqis, the Americans, the refugees, the Christians, the Muslims, and to be with everyone and to experience express that presence of peace and love for them. But when I got there, I saw how much the impact of this war has wounded so many hearts, to the point that it's almost everyone has closed his or her heart, that they don't want to hear about the other side.
What's the other side? What do you mean
other
by closed
side,
their hearts
like,
to whom?
For example, people who are refugees up in the north, and how they blame, you know, the people who were behind of them leaving their homes in Baghdad, in Kirkuk, or in Mosul. People who they don't go to schools anymore, college students who left their colleges because of fears of kidnapping and abuse and persecution. So everyone is angry. Everyone is wounded. Everyone is hurt.
Sunnis angry at Shia. Shia angry at Sunnis.
And Muslim and Christian, and then Americans and Iraqis. Like one of the things I saw a big difference between this visit and the first visit in 2003. When I went there in 2003, I used to see the American soldiers just, you know, walking down the street, shopping, talking to Iraqi people, just like very regular, you know, like with other Iraqi people. But this recent trip, the first 10 days in Iraq, I could not see a soldier.
A single American soldier
walking, you know, down the street or talking to people. And then, you know, the more I spent time with Iraqi people to hear what has happened throughout the years, they told me you don't see them anymore, like walking or driving freely on the street of Baghdad or Kirkuk or Mosul because of all the car bombs and suicide bombs. So they are very careful with their traveling. And even when they go out and travel for a duty, like from a place to place, now there is a policy, like all the Iraqi cars, they have to be behind them by a kilometer or 1.5 to be distant from them. So no one gets close to them. So it just that broke my heart how much there is fear from, you know one another.
Like, you were determined to sit and talk with American soldiers as well, and we'll talk about that experience. But that was such a potentially unpopular step with your Iraqi friends and family and host, and potentially dangerous, that you didn't even mention it to people who were around you, to Iraqis around you in Iraq.
Correct. I didn't mention it even to my own family, my own siblings who, even in the one in Jordan, like when I told them that I was going to Iraq, they even asked me because currently my parents aren't there. So they said, why are you even, you know, planning to go there? I could not give them kind of the full picture what I was hoping to do, because again they feel that they lost everything and here they are refugees and living in a, you know, very small place and miserable, not being able to send their kids to school, relying on coupons given by humanitarian organizations, for the refugees. So they feel like they lost everything because of this war and because of the American presence in Iraq and the occupation. And so I could not explain to them at the beginning why this was an important step for me to take. So I could not share really with my own sisters in Jordan or other family members in Iraq or friends why I wanted to visit the American troops in Baghdad.
But it was important to you.
It was very. It was very important because, especially, I think for me, as a religious sister, but also as a person living in United States, particularly here in Boston and working with Boston University students and faculties, I have seen so much goodness in this country and people of this country. So I felt like they deserve that for me to bring their voice to the people who. They have seen only one side of America and one side of the American people. And same thing by visiting the troops, I wanted to give them the other side of the Iraqi people, the Iraqi heart that they have not seen, because all what they have experienced there is the Iraqis who they get close to them to bomb themselves or, you know, drive cars toward them to kill the American soldiers. So that was very important for me to do because I just wanted both sides to see the other sides of our humanity, that they don't see it because they are so, you know, like just centered about, you know, the war and what the war has caused to each one of them.
There's so much detail we want to pull out of you, and we will in the course of this hour. You wrote up a long report on your trip there. You entitled it "Love is Never Defeated," but I have to say, reading through at many points, it sounds love is certainly embattled in this arena. I mean, you're quoting Pope John Paul II and Benedict and Tim McGraw, the country singer, and Martin Luther King here, but looking for some way or place for Iraqis to embrace one another, for Iraqis and Americans to find a sense of their mutual humanity in this environment of the Iraq War. But I have to say, I didn't see much evidence of that. I didn't read much evidence of that happening in your report itself.
Mm-hmm.
It seems more about division, more about fear, more about danger.
Mm-hmm. That's true, Tom. It was very obvious for this reason. I wrote it, you know, very clearly what I experienced. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I feel this is a step toward healing, a step toward deeper understanding. You know, just like any illness or disease, like if you don't discover it and if you don't acknowledge that you do have that disease, you won't be able to find the cure or go to the doctor or try to deal with it. You know what I mean? So I'm grateful despite the challenges, the difficulties, the few signs of hope that I experienced or people have noticed through my talks or the experience that I wrote. I'm so grateful even for that little sign, because for me this is a step.
A big step for a small lady. 4'10". Did you wear your habit in Iraq?
All the time.
All openly without burqa over
openly.
It?
Openly.
But that identified you as a Christian. You weren't afraid of that drawing?
No, at all, because I wanted the Muslim people, particularly of Iraq, that they would know that I was approaching them. And I wanted, as I said before, I wanted to make it to the Middle East for their feast, Eid al-Adha, to show them that I'm there as a Christian woman. I love them as Christian women.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm talking this hour with Sister Olga Yaqob. Sister Olga of the Eucharist, an Iraqi Catholic nun just back from her troubled homeland. And let's take a call from Marin, calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Marin, you're on the air with Sister Olga.
Hi, Tom. Marin, actually another good Norwegian name like Olga. My question for Sister Olga is, what policies and free will choices in the Iraqi field would, in your opinion, best express the humanity of all faiths? And I'm also curious if, under the American occupation, you were able to get into Abu Ghraib.
Abu Ghraib came before the occupation, and we'll ask about that, Lauren, and thanks for that. Sister Olga, Lauren's calling in from Charleston to say, well, all right, you bring a position of faith to this arena. Talk about what that would mean in terms of policy. If there were a policy that would reflect the perspective, a Christian perspective in your case that you're bringing here, what would that policy be?
I think what I try to do and what I hope that, you know, that would be a policy, hopefully everyone would see it or would believe in it, is to look at each other as we want others look at us. In my faith, my Lord taught me that to love everyone as I love myself. And I think this is what I think was powerful in this visit, that I tried to visit everyone and to love everyone and to respect everyone just as I would love that for myself or for my people or for my family. So I really believe in the power of love, and I do believe in the power of accepting each other and being open for each other. So if there is one policy or one rule that will save really what is happening in Iraq, would be the policy and the power of love.
We understand that as a personal position, as a position of your particular faith.
Mm-hmm.
But Morin's, I think, asking, well, how would that be turned into a government policy or even military policy, or when a devout, a religious person like yourself finds themselves in the midst of this sort of a
mm-hmm.
environment of war and suspicion and fear, is there any way to turn a principled position, let's say a principled based on love, into policy, into actual policies in the field.
Yeah, I definitely, Tom, I'm not imposing my my faith on the listeners or even the politicians, but I think even for the politicians, if they would think about other countries and people of other nations as they think of their own country and of their own people, I think we would be in a better place and a better world. So I would say, even if they don't want to see it as a faith perspective, but as I said, if they think about other nations and other countries as they think of their own nation and their own country, we weren't going to be where we are today. We cannot impose like our views, what we have in our country, on other countries.
Do you think that's what's going on in Iraq? Do Iraqis perceive it that way?
Yes,
Americans,
yes,
imposing their view?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think especially for me as a Christian person who grew up in Arab and Islamic country, I definitely do believe that we cannot bring the democracy that we have in the West to Middle East. We have to respect and let those people find their own democracy within their own religion and within their own belief. And I think this is what really saved our world from this you know, like the war and hatred and animosity that is going around. And I'm not talking this just for the sake of my people in my homeland, but everywhere. If every nation, every leader would look at other nations and other countries and other people as they look at their own country and nation, I don't think we would go and impose, especially through arms, our views on other countries and other people.
At this point, you're pretty empathetic to the American point of view. You know it well. At some personal risk to yourself, you were determined to go and sit with American soldiers and bring them comfort in Iraq, which, you know, as you've said, is not exactly popular and certainly not a safe thing to do for someone in your circumstances. But with all that, I'm reading here in your report back that you were shocked at what you were hearing from fellow Iraqis about Americans when you would sit. Wouldn't sit at the dinner table or just sit down and talk. What was it that was shocking to you in their perspective on Americans at this point in 2008?
Yeah, I think because they believe like all the chaos and the suffering and all the bad things that they were result of this war, it all happened because of the invasion and the occupation that happened in 2003. So they do believe that is because of that. You know, the borders were open. A lot of people entered the country, especially in the first 2 years after that war. And they did use the pain and the suffering of Iraqi people. Like, I grew up, Tom, in that country for 36 years of my life before I came to the United States. Mm-hmm. I never heard the word Al-Qaeda. I never heard the word terrorism growing up in that country. I never even heard the animosity that we hear about it today between Shias and Sunnis. I studied my first college 5 years in the College of Science. I lived for 5 years with roommates. I never knew who was Shia, who was Sunni. We grew up peacefully together. We grew up in a very humanly, like brotherly and sisterly relationships.
But so, in those 36 years, you knew what a dictator was in Saddam Hussein. You certainly knew, I assume, that something about the torture that went on there. There was ethnic cleansing in Iraq. I mean, it was hardly a paradise before the invasion in 2003.
They were definitely, Tom. I'm not ignoring that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it wasn't to the extent that we have it today. And because today, people weren't prepared for the freedom that we talk about it today. All that has happened, like after this war, as I said, a lot of strangers entered the country and did use the pain and suffering of the Iraqi people to feed that animosity. Maybe it was there. I'm not denying that. I'm not ignoring that. Mm-hmm. But it was fed in a, you know, tremendously because of and after this war, to the point that has divided the country 100%.
Which is a pretty deep division. Mike's calling from Leesburg, Virginia. Mike, you're on the air with Sister Olga.
Hi, Tom. Yes, I have a question for Sister, and thank you for your program. I'm learning a lot. Sister, could you answer this question? Is Iraq better off for the United States having deposed Saddam Hussein? And I would guess that they're not, but I would love to hear your comments on that.
Thank you so much for your question. A lot of people here in the United States, very often they do ask me this question. And I always say, yes, people suffered during Saddam's power and authority when he was on power, but again was, you know, very different from what we have today. And again, I'm not going to say, like, if they wish that he's back or if he was still in power. But I would say, you know, as I said, their suffering is tremendous now. And it's very difficult and it's very different. Yes, I think the challenge is by having the American presence all those years there, the Iraqi people don't feel that America came only to liberate us from Saddam. But they feel, okay, they came in order to liberate us from him, but they took over our country. They occupied our country. So that is what making them feel like, you know, this is even bad than before or worse than before.
There's a lot of talk in Washington on the political campaign trail in this country today about the surge, the increase in American troops, and what's perceived or described to Americans as a more peaceful situation now than, let's say, a year ago. It's being described as a success that Americans should be hopeful about, and the implication that the Iraqis would be have become more hopeful as well as a result of this greater military presence. Did you hear Iraqis? Are they aware of the surge? Are they talking about it? Do they see things as having improved in the last, let's say, year?
They are aware of it, and I would say before I got there, before December, they were like the last 3 months before December, they did say that the situation was a little bit improving. You know, they were less like kidnapping or violence or, mm-hmm. you know, attacks. But then again, like in December was it, you know, tremendous, you know, like attacks and violence and suffering happened again. On the Epiphany Sunday for us, as a, you know, in a Christian tradition, mm-hmm. you know, they bombed like 9 churches and a convent on one day. So it's, I don't see, like, when people say that it has been improved, you never know. I mean, maybe they stop for a month or two or three, and then again, it starts again. And I personally, especially, you know, after being there and hearing that from people, definitely Iraqi people will not be happy with increasing the number of troops. I personally believe that the best way to, and I'm not saying that we have to withdraw the troops 100% immediately, but we do have to show a sign for Iraqi people that we did not come to stay in your country. We came to help you, and now it's time for us to withdraw gradually, and with asking the United Nations and humanitarian groups to enter into that country and help the Iraqi people to rebuild their country on their own.
Are Iraqis afraid of an American troop withdrawal? Do they fear what might happen if and when American troop numbers go down significantly?
No.
But we're told that American troops are what stand between Iraq and bloody chaos, or have been.
I'm not saying they aren't helping, but at the same time, as I say, the more we increase that, it will, you know, convince people that we came to stay. Really, I mean, it was hard for me to hear, like, the Iraqi people keep calling the Americans occupiers. You know, they came to occupy our country. Like, and I have kids here that I work with at BU, and it's hard for me. And I have kids in ROTC that I love and serve and minister to.
ROTC. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And, mm-hmm.
and headed into the military.
Yes. And that was hard for me to hear, like, how that would be if they are talking about one of my own spiritual kids here. You know what I mean? So it will not help, really, to increase the numbers of troops. We need to withdraw that the military presence in Iraq, the American military presence, and provide more, like, as I say, humanitarian groups through United Nations and help those people to rebuild their country on their own. That would be a proof that we didn't come to occupy your country.
Let's take a call from Joe in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire. Joe, you're on the air with Sister Olga Yakob.
Hi, Tom. What an incredibly interesting program. Sister, I'm concerned, and I guess would be interested to hear your opinion about whether or not the Iraqi government has the capacity and the will to bring together the various factions and to actually create a society that can live in peace.
Maybe for now they don't. it's clear that they need a lot of help, a lot of support, and just imagine, like, this poor land, this poor region, this country has been, you know, going through so many wars since the beginning of 1980. So definitely, whether the government or the leaders of Iraqi people now, they definitely need a lot of help and support. I'm not saying they are 100% capable to run their own country. They do need support, they do need help, but at the same time, that help doesn't have to be 100% by American troops.
Do you think that Iraq will find stability and peace again as a unified nation? I'm wondering if behind Joe's question is a question about whether or not Iraq will or should split up.
It will definitely take time. What has happened, Tom, you know, I have to be also realistic. It's not going to be fixed overnight because a lot of souls have died from the Shiites and Sunnis and the Kurds and the Arab and the Christians. So everyone is angry. Everyone is sad. Everyone is hurt. So it will take a while, but it will take at same time. You know, what I try to encourage through my, you know, mission trip to Iraq, this recent trip, is to encourage people that every person, every leader, every religious leader has to make an effort, whether it was a Christian, a Muslim, a Shiite, a Sunni, a Kurdish leader. It's a responsibility of all those leaders, representative of all the different ethnic groups that we have in Iraq. I do believe it's possible, but it's possible with belief and faith that we all have to make an effort in order to see that happening.
At some danger to yourself, you visited American troops. People discouraged you from doing this. And they said, that's a bad idea. You did it anyway. You sat with them. What did they say to you?
It was really very confirming visit for me that you know, there is so much in us as human being that is beyond what we hear or know about each other. Visiting the troops, and I told them, I came to show you another side of the Iraqi heart that maybe you have not seen because you go out for a fight. And I told them, I came to bring you also something of home that you could not visit during this Christmas season or holidays. Mm-hmm. So I spent time with them. I was able finally to get a permission. I needed a permission to enter the green zone in Baghdad to be able to visit them. And I was able also to communicate with some of the chaplains there in the American base in order to, you know, help me meet with the soldiers. So I tried to explain that to them. But one of the moving things that happened during my visit with the soldiers is they were just like human like everyone else, just like my own Iraqi people. They just wanted to share their stories, and they were happy to have a visitor who's not a military person, who's not a diplomatic person, is a nun, and an Iraqi nun. And they knew how much I really took a risk in order to be there, you know, to wait for a long time for a permission and go through a lot of checkpoints, and knowing that the green zone has been watched by the insurgents. They watch mm-hmm. who's going in, who's mm-hmm. coming out, and as an Iraqi person to visit an American soldiers on an Iraqi soil mm-hmm. was a big risk. But for them to see that I took all that out of love for the American people that I met throughout the 7 years I've been here was a tremendous sign of consolation for them.
What did you feel in their spirits?
Obviously, you know, like they were sad, especially during that holy season that they were away from their kids, from their home, and seeing a religious sister, they just wanted to share stories about their families. I remember when I gave them a hug and I was telling them, as you probably, you know, some of the, you know, Christian listeners would know that for us, Christmas is not a day, it's a season. Mm. So I was there during the Christmas season. Mm-hmm. So when I was hugging them, especially the Christian one, I was telling them, you know, happy Sunday, happy Christmas, you know, Merry Christmas. They were saying, oh, sister, you even made it brighter for us by coming. And one of the soldiers who's from Massachusetts, when I gave him a hug, and he said, sister, this is the closest that I've been to home since I've been sent to Iraq, by hugging someone from home. And for me, that meant the whole world. If I was able to make one Iraq American soldier feel that he came home just by me visiting him in Iraq, was very moving.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, We're talking this hour with Sister Olga Jakob, Sister Olga of the Eucharist, an Iraqi Catholic nun just back from her troubled homeland. She's been resident in the U.S. for half a dozen years, and recently, over the Christmas holidays and into January last month, visiting Iraqis and Americans in Iraq. Let me take a call from Marita in Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Marita. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, Sister, what you did was really great, visiting the troops for Christmas. Sometimes when you're in the green zone or red zone, when you're locked in and you just hear the bombs, I was there in 2004 to 2005, you just forget how nice Iraqi people are and how many great people are out there. But because of the situation that you're in, and you don't get to meet a lot of people out there, it's so special when you finally meet an Iraqi person who is just a real normal person. So I just wanted to say that's great what you did.
Marita, were you in the military service or civilian contractor?
I was a civilian contractor, and I was there for 15 months. And during that time, I have met a lot of great Iraqi people. And it's so sad that in the news it doesn't come across that there are a lot of great people out there and that they're suffering. They're suffering.
Marita, thank you so much. Sister Olga, you described the skepticism, antagonism many Iraqis describe toward Americans. Can you foresee a time when Iraqis and Americans might somehow be able to walk and talk in Iraq's streets again? Or is that years away now, if ever?
I do believe in hope. And I will continue praying for that it will happen. But obviously, because of all that, you know, this war has caused, it will take time. It will take time for healing. It will take time for forgiveness. It will take time for understanding, for openness to know each other as who we are. As our caller just said earlier, you know, like when you get to meet the people and interact with them, you would see them, they are just normal people like you and I. Whether as an American person interacting with Iraqi people on the regular basis and seeing their life, or an Iraqi person visiting the troops. Like when I visited the troops, we didn't talk about politics. We didn't talk about what they are doing there. As I said, all what they want is, especially during that holy season, to share about their families. One of the soldiers who is married with two kids, he was sharing with me, he just wanted as a dad to talk about his kids during that season. And he said his youngest son, he was 5 when his father was sent to Iraq. He couldn't get it, like, why daddy's not home for Thanksgiving? Why daddy doesn't pick me up from school? Why daddy doesn't read me stories at night? So he said, I used to write like every 2 days long emails, stories to my wife and ask her to print them and read them to my son. And he still wasn't satisfied. He wanted the voice of dad, the presence of dad, the kiss of dad at night. And he said, I had to be creative, sister, to create a big game on a large sheet of paper that I will play one part and then roll it and mail it to my son, that he would play his part and mail it to me. And he said, sometimes takes us, you know, 3 to 5 months to finish one game. And
that
is
beautiful. As close as they can come to touching.
Like, you don't hear that, Tom. And it was so moving, so beautiful.
Marita, thank you very much for your call. Let's get one from Pocatello, Idaho. Greg, you're on the air with Sister Olga.
Thank you, Tom. She's made great points. And, you know, I think it's true that, you know, the people of our different nations are, I mean, we're not the problem. It's the, you know, the extremes. It's, you know, our leaders and the leaders of the different factions in Iraq. And my question is, if, you know, with a significantly decreased military presence, how could anyone going over there to do humanitarian work feel safe? And, you know, I just think that the carnage would just be great, because there is so much resentment. No matter if those people were over there to help or not, they're still Americans. And the people, you know, the extremists would only see them as Americans, not people trying to help their people.
Just stronger.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Because of that, I'm not suggesting that it has to be like very immediate with large numbers of humanitarian groups, especially from the West or particularly from United States. And as I said earlier, I do believe it's an effort of every, not only every leader or every religious leader or every political leader, but also an effort of every person. You know, like I'm just a person. I'm not a leader of any nation, any religion. I just took this step because I believed I have to start a dialogue with those people and bring that presence. And I do believe if every person would try with just one little effort or one thing at the time, or, you know, like with one prayer or one word of love, one word of forgiveness, one word of healing, and all the people of Iraq and the leaders and the religious leaders, if they try to talk to their people and bring that understanding, hopefully with time, you know, people will be open to welcome people from the West and accept them, that they are there to help them rebuild their country.
But what about Iraqis being open to one another? If they hear you talking like that about love and reaching out to one another, does that sound, you know, hopelessly idealistic, Panglossian? Do they say, you know, what are you talking about? We don't have enough food. We don't trust each other. We've been kidnapped and bombed and killed. You don't know. You've been in America. It's not that easy just to turn to love.
I agree with you, and I did hear that as well, Tom. But at the same time, like especially when I visited the Muslim people of Iraq during their feast, which was just right before our mm-hmm. Christmas, Eid al-Adha, mm-hmm. they call it in Arabic. And I visited the Shias and Sunnis, and again, I told them, you know, can you see, like, despite of your the difference in your tradition, which way you pray, which time you pray, but it's the same religion. You believe in the teaching of the same prophet, and you celebrate the same feast day,
Shias
and Sunnis. Mm-hmm. So try to see each other from that side.
And to that, what did they say?
And, you know, they did share that some of them, they've been wounded and hurt, as you said, mm-hmm. because they have killed people from both sides. And I told them, okay, if you don't stop, you know, like killing one another, if you say, he killed my father, I will kill his son, and he will killed my mm-hmm. mom, and I will kill his sister, when this would end? Like, as Gandhi used to say, an eye from an eye makes the world blind.
Let's take a call from Lake Placid, New York. John, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. I was wondering about the effect Iran may have on the peace in Iraq.
Destroga, Iran. Do Iraqis speak of Iran much? Can you see the effect of Iran on the situation in Iraq? Were you paying attention to that?
When I was there, really, I didn't hear much about that because, as I said, people have suffered so much in the last 5 years. They have lost a lot. They have, you know, like lost everything, lost their loved ones. They have been misplaced. They lost homes. They lost a lot. So really, all their talks and their sharings were just about, you know, what they have been through. They didn't express, like, you know, fear from Iran or other countries or how that will impact. They just want a solution, an end for what is going on there now.
And what about the daily life of the Iraqis you were interacting with? You, in your 36 years there, saw Iraq in many tough times. There was war with Iran. There mm-hmm. was the Gulf War. That wasn't easy. There was the sanctions. That wasn't easy. Mm-hmm. The physical conditions, electricity, food, water, safety in the streets, how does it compare now with what you saw in those difficult times in Iraq?
No, I mean, definitely the safety aspect, it's completely different. It's not safe at all to go out. Like when I was there as a religious sister, I used to take public transportation, not this recent visit.
You're talking
visit.
Back in the 1990s,
correct.
Let's say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I used to take public transportation, travel on my own, even though as a woman, you know, like a religious sister. Mm-hmm. But when I went there now, like all the sisters were telling me, you cannot go out by yourself. You cannot go out anytime. I had to be back to the convent or to the family where I was staying before the sunset, and I could not also leave very early when the roads were kind of still empty. Mm-hmm. So there were certain hours where I could go out, and I always have to be with someone and someone that I trust. I could not just go out and take a cab, mm-hmm. for example. I had to have to be with someone who would drive me, who that I know or the sister would know. So definitely the safety aspect has changed a lot. It's not safe, and you know we experienced a lot of dangers also driving from town to town and moving from place to place. So it's definitely the safety aspect. It's not there at all.
Water, electricity.
Same thing. Again, you hear that there is an improvement in that. And again, it's not to that extent that you hear about it. I was in many places in Baghdad, in Kirkuk, in some villages in Mosul. Again, a lot of places, if they get 2 hours electricity, they are lucky. A lot of people, they cannot obviously afford to buy a generator for, you know, to have electricity their own. But sometimes, like one neighborhood, like 20 or 50 homes, they share together like monthly payment to buy one generator. And again, they cannot use it 24/7. It's a machine, you know. But at least if they get only 2 hours, like regularly, electricity, and then they use the generator just at night, like from the sunset to like maximum 10 p.m. That is the only time, and they use it only like for light. They cannot use like for refrigerator, ironing. Actually, they take more power.
Now, is this worse than in the 1990s, let's say?
Yes, really. I mean, some places, because in 90s, during the embargo, not all the places were affected the way that we have it today.
What about water?
And same thing, water, you know. And you know, one thing I love about my people, it's their generosity. Because I was like a visitor and a guest, a lot of places they cannot have regular like running water. Again, they get once a week, and they have big jars like in bathrooms or in the kitchen. They fill them with water once a week, and the one in the kitchen, it has to be boiled and, you know, left for next day to be cold and to drink or to use it for cook. And then for taking shower, obviously I could not take shower there because they cannot do that either. Was once a week each person could take a sponge bath, and because I was the visitor or the guest, they used to give me like the first person to take shower. And just was so moving to see that, and at the same time very difficult because again you don't hear these stories.
It's a hot country. Security wise, you had to drive north at one point.
Correct.
And I was reading in your account of how suddenly the road was blocked.
Correct.
And there were guns and anything could have happened right there where you were on the road.
Yeah, correct. When we drove from Baghdad up to the north, because I couldn't find a flight. There are certain hours that, or certain days a week, sometimes they do have a flight from Baghdad, from the national airport in Baghdad up to the north. But the days that I was there, and because I had like specific missions scheduled to visit with the leaders, religion leaders of different Christian denominations or Muslims, so I could not like wait longer, so I had to make a decision to rent a car and drive.
And what happened?
Again, like after an hour and a half driving from Baghdad toward the north, all the cars were stopped by insurgents. We could not even, you know, recognize their faces because they were wearing masks. And they stopped a lot of cars who they were ahead of us, and they kidnapped all the people in those cars. And it was really terrifying because on one hand, I wanted to go out and speak to those people because my heart was broken for the people who were kidnapped. And then the driver was terrified, the one who was driving me. He said, "Sister, please, you know, just don't talk. Don't go out of the car, because then they will come after us. And I have 3 kids, and I don't want to die." And it just, I felt torn between him and the people in my car and people who were kidnapped. And just like for no reason, we don't know why they kidnapped those people, whether, you know, was for a political reason or they just are going to use them as, you know, and ask money for in order to release them. So it just was so frustrating.
A moment in a day in the life in Iraq, just on the road. Let's take a call from Yasmin in Boston. Yasmin, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. I really appreciate that On Point put this sister on the air, because recently last year I had an opportunity to go to Lebanon after they had that war between Israel. We were able to take different religious leaders from different religions to Lebanon, and they had the same heart as this sister has, to love the people and to let them know that America and the religious leaders in America really want to do the right thing for these people as far as having them have a great life. And it is not, somehow the media has not gotten this across to the public here in the United States. So I so appreciate the beauty of this sister, because this is the power that religion really does have. When you have people like this that will sacrifice themselves to live for the sake of other people, is exactly what will bring peace.
But Yasmin, we're not sending, by and large, nuns to Iraq. We're sending soldiers.
Yes, but this nun represents a religious core, a woman who's experienced American culture, who chose to lead a life of religion, and she was able to take her life and dedicate it to people of her own culture, as well as the people who are in there as soldiers. And there are a lot of religious leaders who do these things, and somehow they're not being reported.
Yeah, Yasmin, that is a beautiful thing, and yet we look at the whole situation, and it's not beautiful, and it's not close to beautiful. Yasmin speaks about doing the right thing in Iraq. Sister Olga, at this point, what is the right thing for the United States to do, the only part that Americans have much control over?
You know, I especially after this trip, I spoke to our Boston University students. We did have an event a few days ago at the Catholic Center, and was open for all the Boston University students. And I was really impressed by their presence and by what they are searching and seeking, especially the young people who are the hope of every nation, whether, you know, America.
What should they ask their government to do?
You know, they all are hoping for the best for everyone and seeking peace and hoping for peace. And I really, you know, hope that every person in this nation and other nations, they will make an effort to make this happen. And I know the right to do right things, it's not always easy, and it might take sacrifices. But when I'm sacrificing something for the sake of a lot, not only the two nations that I love, my home in Iraq and my home here in the United States, but if this will be an example, how much we can do for the rest of the world. So I feel like to do the right things, it's possible, and we all are called to do that, despite the sacrifices.
We hear the story, and it's inspiring, and yet there sits the difficulty and the problem, and it's daunting. I appreciate your stepping up in your own way and bearing witness and bringing it back to us. It's been great speaking with you. Thank you so much. We're glad you came back safe and sound.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Sister Olga Yaakob, Sister Olga of the Eucharist, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.